Welcome to Stutter Talk, everybody. I'm Eric Jackson, the Eric Jackson who won the weight loss bet versus Peter Reitzes, here with my buddy, Peter Reitzes.
Yet to be determined, that bet. Hey, everyone.
And good friend of Stutter Talk, B-Team member. We will get a B-Team show out again soon.
I got some topics in mind.
B-Team member Joel Cordy. Hey, Joel.
I actually was talking about these topics with Karen on Tuesday, but she shot him down.
Really?
That's why we hired her.
I didn't really have them all fleshed out, but she was just like, no, she didn't say that.
That's great.
She wasn't a huge fan of them, though.
I could see her shooting them down.
I see. She's a tough one.
She's
got the veto power.
On the ball with these things.
She's like, you know Peggy on Mad Men? You know, when she found her confidence, she got really tough.
Yeah.
I think that's Karen. She's like our Peggy.
Yeah.
All right.
Hence Plan B. That's a weird joke.
But that is why we did say she would be organized. Okay, anyway, go.
We have a couple of announcements at the top of the show today. First of all, this Thursday, this Wednesday, which is August 18th, there's a support group meeting at Brooklyn College, and the Brooklyn Independent Television people will be there taping the support group meeting. So if you are looking to attend a support group, please come. If you're into this going out on cable and on the internet, please come and join us. If you have any questions about this, please contact me at eric@stuttertalk.com. I think it'll be a really great opportunity. It will be cool to get out there what it's like to be part of a stuttering support group. And of course, if you don't want to be filmed, you don't have to be filmed. And I hope you can come, Joel.
I was just thinking that in my brain.
That's good. That's a great place, your brain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would like to be there, but I will be in Delaware. Yeah. So.
Oh, yeah. And you should come too, Peter. Oh,
thanks.
Sorry, you're going to be there.
Okay. Next announcement. The University of Maryland is doing some research on stuttering. A lot of good research comes from the University of Maryland. And the participants are wanted for a research study regarding stuttering and word production. I'm not going to read the whole press release, but I'll read parts of it. The purpose of this study is to examine the influence of processing demand on production in adults who stutter. This study will examine selected processes of word production under varying levels of processing demand. So the PhD student, I believe pronounce their name, Pei Zhu will be in New York in August 16th through the 27th, and is scheduling participants for this study. If you are interested, please contact Pei Zhu at ptsai1@umd.edu.
Okay, so Joel is in New York right now, interning at the very program that I went through and interned at, and that you went through, Joel, the intensive program at AIS, the American Institute for Stuttering, which, let's give them a little plug here, which you can find at stutteringtreatment.org.
I just want to jump in and say, a day or two ago, I was walking down Fifth Avenue, got done taking my son to the doctor, and who did I run into? But Joel. And it was like an episode of Seinfeld. You know how like Seinfeld in New York, they always run into people on the street, but it never really happens? I ran into Joel on the streets of New York City. So that was pretty cool.
I run into people all the time in New York.
In Brooklyn?
Everywhere.
And what was even crazier, I didn't tell you this at the time, but that was a day where we had actually talked about you a lot, because we talked about voluntary stuttering the whole day.
That's crazy.
And about the article that you wrote, Voluntary Stuttering, the How and the Why.
And I have a big smile right now because I'm very proud of that article. So thank you. But it was great to have that Seinfeld moment. Anyway, I'll pass it back to you, Eric.
I just want to... everything going well? so far? It's been like a week for you now?
Yeah, I mean, it was really wild coming back here because 2 years ago is when I took the intensive program, and I really credit it with changing so many things about how I thought about stuttering, how I approached managing my own stuttering, and how I reacted to moments of stuttering. So it's really interesting to read some of the journal entries from when I was in the program 2 years ago and how different the feelings are.
I just now. I just have recently read my journal entries from the program, and I was actually really surprised by a lot of them, and maybe at some point we can read them on the show. But yeah, it's a really nostalgic, like,
definitely,
wow, what a crazy place I was in during that 3 week program.
I actually have a question for you though, Eric.
Please. It's
something I've been thinking about this week. I've been noticing that while I've been interning at the program, it's almost been like I've been in therapy myself because of all the things that I'm talking about and telling the clients to do. In the back of my head, I'm like, well, wait, have I really been doing that? Is that something I've been thinking about for a while? And I've noticed it's been really helping me to make some changes in my own speech and already this week. And I was wondering, when you were an intern at AIS, if you had a similar experience.
I think just being around in that environment and like thinking about stuttering all day, where it's your job to do it, where you're in a really supportive environment with other people, where you get to kind of hear other people's reactions to these ideas, you know. I think that definitely helps. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I mean, I'm not sure how much it's helping at this point, but I think at least in the last 6 months, I haven't really been thinking about managing stuttering a lot. But I know we've talked, like at the NSA convention and stuff, that I'm kind of in a place where I want to make some changes again. So I feel like for me personally, it's kind of been therapeutic and actually quite a bit more than I expected. But anyway, I actually had another question for you because
he's going to be a good B team member.
Well, I just keep thinking about the different places I've been in, and you've already been in these places because we were both clients at AIS, and then you were an intern at AIS, and I'm just interested to see how our feelings are matching up and things like that.
Yeah.
So that the first week at the AIS program is pretty much all devoted to stuttering modification therapies, and you know, we've talked about all that stuff a lot. And the second week, there's a lot more emphasis on fluency shaping therapies because of their whole integrated approach that they do at AIS.
Can I translate that?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like what you're saying is that the first part of the program at AIS is working on ways to stutter differently, the stuttering modification. And the second part...
Well, actually, a really big part of it, too, is the advertising piece and the going outside, challenging yourself, stuttering openly.
Okay. So the first part is... Well, let's really just dig into that for us.
Okay.
Second, because as Eric just showed, just saying stuttering modification might not give the full flavor of it. So the first half, you're going out and you're stuttering openly as much as possible. Is that correct?
Yeah, and you're really trying to stutter cleanly too. So you're trying to get rid of all the garbage speech, all the fillers, all the avoidances, and just trying to get to those pure stutters and hanging with them and feeling all those different emotions.
Okay. And at the same time, you're also working on pullouts and cancellations and the stuttering easily, stuttering differently stuff.
Yep.
And then the second part of the program is the fluency shaping, where you're, the way that I would say it is, you're working on ways to not stutter. Mm-hmm. But how would they say it there?
I would say, yeah, that's exactly right. You're working on calibrating your speech muscles in a way and training them so that to prevent stuttering.
Yeah, I think a big term that they used was retraining your vocal mechanism.
Again, we're just describing, we're trying to describe as well as we can the program that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay, so just wanted to clarify for the listeners who didn't know about mm-hmm. it. Okay, so please.
Oh, okay. Yeah, my question.
Yeah.
Okay, so last night I went to Eric's show. Eric
yes, and
plays
thank you
in
for
a
coming.
Band. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was really good. And by the way, the friend that I went to college with, she thought you guys were really rad.
Oh.
She came too.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Oh,
all right, I've been meaning to talk to you about this word rad for some time, Joel, but...
This guy at my work says it all the time. And
it's a great word.
Is
it really?
I wish it would come back.
Really?
In full swing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I prefer awesome, but okay.
But, well, in all fairness, we should point out that you're quite a few years older than everybody else in this room right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, so. I remember the first time that Rad went around. Okay, anyway, please.
okay, so my question was to you, this second part of this intensive program where we're going to spend a good deal of time on learning fluency shaping, which is called vocal fold management that at AIS. And I posed the question to you because I know you're more you more practice stuttering modification therapies in your personal life and presumably your clients. I was wondering if there was ever an instance where you would use fluency shaping type therapies for a client.
So obviously a huge, almost impossible to answer question.
Well, I prefaced it last night. I'm like, I got a loaded question.
which I am not going to be able to answer right now, but I think it could get some cool conversation going. First of all, I did, for like a good 6 months after my intensive program, I practiced the vocal fold management stuff, how it was introduced to me, a lot.
How often?
I would wake up in the morning and I would drill stuff. If I could find time during the day, I would do it.
Okay.
And then when I got home at night, you know, so like really drilling, working my vocal folds, you know, and that hierarchy, sounds, syllables, words, sentences, you know, all that stuff. And then, yes, after a while, when it never became normal or it never felt normal for me, my speech never got to a normal place, I started to realize that strategy that they showed me at AIS wasn't for me. So now, to answer your question, like, would I ever introduce fluency shaping in therapy?
Yeah, because
with people,
because we all know there's a lot of different stuttering management therapies out there, and that you know, you talk to people at NSA and something works for somebody, like voluntary stuttering, and something else really works for somebody else. And it seems like, as unique as all of our stutters are, everyone has their own little strategy for coping with it. So I was wondering if there was an instance where if you saw a client where you thought that kind of therapy would be beneficial, and then treat them with that.
I will tell you right now that I don't believe in fluency shaping therapy at all. the way it's taught and the way it's introduced. For me, it was at AIS. I don't believe at all in that school of therapy, and I would never, you know, introduce those strategies like that. However, there are many things, I think, that are useful as far as the feelings that you get when you speak and you're able to tune in to what's going on with your speaking mechanism, I'll say, for lack of a better term right now. I just think the way it's introduced, you know, in this step process where if you practice it enough, it will get you to a certain place outside the clinic. I don't buy that at all.
Okay.
So like, I really think that, yes, there are some useful things that come out of the fluency shaping school, one of them being easing into speech, you know? Mm-hmm. But I think there are better ways to explain it than calling it an easy onset or saying that, okay, we're going to work on our sounds first, and then we're going to work on our words, and then we're going to work on our multi-words, and then we're going to work on sentences, and we're going to build this thing up, and the more you practice, the better you're going to get at it.
Okay.
I'm so far removed from fluency shaping. It's almost just like a foreign entity to me at this point. Like, with all sincerity, I'm not even sure what it is anymore.
Yeah, well, that's a big part of it.
Well, what does that mean?
Well, something like fluency shaping, I mean, is it really based on the idea that people who stutter don't know how to talk, so we're going to teach people who stutter to start at the sound level and to build it up from single sounds or moans to syllables and words and sentences and phrases? And then, oh, by the way, then we're going to jump into the real world where everything falls apart. I mean, it seems like if we're getting a hot air balloon and we fly up and we look down upon the stuttering world, and I try to do that sometimes, and I think of fluency shaping, it just seems like bizarre world to me. I honestly, I've never gotten it. I've tried. I've watched people do it. I've read about it. I've talked to many people who have been through it. And it seems so unnatural, or something about it has just clicks less and less and less with me. But go ahead, Joel.
Okay. All right. Just to preface this statement, I don't want to shortchange myself, but 2 years ago, I thought stuttering was purely psychological. I didn't know anything about stuttering. So I've been at this whole stuttering thing for about 2 years. You guys have been at it a bit longer. But with that said, if someday I'm a speech pathologist, I want to be able to help anybody. And
I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah. I hear stories. I hear about situations where fluency shaping could be beneficial. For example, it doesn't have to be limited to this type of client, but say you have somebody that blocks on every word and for like 20 seconds per block. I mean, somewhere out there, there's a stutter like that just is having a lot of difficulty communicating any information in a reasonable amount of time. Do you think that a fluency shaping type approach would be beneficial to that type of client?
Let me just throw something out. The other flip side of that is, let's imagine a therapy program or a therapist, and every person who stutters who comes through the door is treated with fluency shaping.
Okay.
Well, that's probably a much more common scenario than the one that you just described. I don't know that many people who stutter for 20 seconds on a syllable. In fact, I can only think of one, and that was Marty Geiser, personally. I mean, I, Eric, can you think of anyone who stutters for 20 seconds?
I can, yeah.
20 seconds?
Well,
that's a long time.
I was just framing an example for argument's sake.
I hear your point, Peter, but I just want to reply to Joel. I think that there's a better way to explain what you're doing with your speaking mechanism than to use this box of fluency shaping. You know, this is how we do it. The goal is perfect fluency. If you practice it hard enough, you're going to go outside and at some point you're going to achieve a lot more fluency. I think completely hypothetical situation. A person walks in and really, really stutters a lot, really struggles, maybe on every syllable. You can talk about things like breathing, phrasing, easing into speech, like easy, but without using that umbrella term, fluency shaping. And that's where I think the problem comes in, is when it's like, oh, would you use fluency shaping with somebody? Okay. No, I would not use fluency shaping with somebody, but I could very well introduce a lot of things that might be very familiar to people who claim that they're using fluency shaping. Does that make sense?
Well, actually, this is interesting. I just thought about this. I remember when I graduated from AIS, and when
you were quite the scholar,
yeah,
Joel.
When I left
in that program,
what was happening for me is that I was getting a lot of spontaneous fluency, and then whenever I would feel a block coming up, I would go into like my fluency shaping mode, and then just like use that until I got rid of the block. And I remember going to Asha, and we were talking about stuttering the whole time.
Let me finish. I can't though. Like, what's this fluency shaping mode? Like,
well,
what is that even?
I was thinking about all the stuff that you learn when you learn fluency or vocal fold management at AIS.
Right. And what I'm saying is that there are better ways to explain a lot of those things as opposed to using the term fluency shaping.
Can I jump in here with a point?
I just kind of want to finish my point, though.
Joel, please.
Okay, all right. So I was told then when we were talking about stuttering, and I was told that I was using stuttering modification. And I was like, no, I'm using vocal fold management. And they're like, no, you're not. Yeah. And I guess if you want to get really technical, yeah, I wasn't, but I was using things that I learned while learning fluency shaping type therapies to manage blocks.
Okay.
So,
exactly. I'm sorry, Peter, but why does it need to be either referred to as or called fluency shaping? It's like every time we're talking about it, it's fluency shaping, and it's so confusing because there are so many different things that you do when you're learning a lot of those things.
Okay.
Okay. So let me just take a step back here. Let's say, Joel, that you're in therapy, mm-hmm. and you have a block, and the therapist says to you, Joel, where was that block? And you say, oh, well, I tense the vocal folds.
Okay.
Okay, so the therapist then says, okay, Joel, well, would you like to practice untensing the vocal folds? Or we could work on when you're going to have that stutter, you could preemptively focus on not tensing where you usually would. Well, is that fluency shaping? Is that stuttering modification? I honestly don't know, and I don't care. It's just a matter of problem solving. So what it sounds like that you, what you're just talking about a minute ago, of being at Asha and stuttering and working through it, it sounds like you problem solved. And what I'm rejecting more and more is this idea of speech tools and packages. And, well, you know, to be well-rounded, you need to use fluency shaping and stutter modification and blah, 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 blah. Well, whatever happened to just making it a little easier than that and just identifying what you're doing and making changes? And another way to look at it is most people who stutter don't stutter all that much. Or another way to say it is most people who stutter have a lot of speech that is not stuttered. So why would we want to throw the baby out with the bathwater? Why do we want to philosophically decide, well, because there are occasional moments of stuttering, let's change all of the speech? Well, I don't know. That doesn't seem to me like a logical way to proceed. Now, it sounds like through your experience, you learned some skills, and that's great. I have no problem with that. But I feel no reason to, you know, put on a white coat and say, well, you know, I use an integrated approach with fluency shaping and stuttering modification, and I integrate them. And like, no, I think about stuttering and I try to help my clients think about stuttering.
I think by using that term, fluency shaping, for so many different things that are happening and that a person is doing when they're speaking, you know, it's like reducing everything that goes on in that particular school of thought to like, oh, that's when you sound like a robot and connect your speech. And I think that that's the problem.
Can I throw in one more problem with fluency shaping? There are casualties of fluency shaping. Being a speech pathologist for now about 10 years, I've had numerous people, teenagers, children, certainly adults, come into my office, and they have been through fluency shaping programs, and the fluency shaping is now part of the stuttering. And somebody... Somebody will come into my office and tell me that they're speaking fluently, and that's how they sound. That's how they sound. And it sounds like, to my ear... it's pretty clear that they've been through fluency shaping. It's become part of their struggle, but they want to believe, or they do believe that it's quote fluent. But it sure sounds a struggle.
Let me just say something, though. Yeah, the way you are just speaking right now, if you wouldn't have said that you perceived yourself as being fluent, or that this client perceived themselves to be fluent, I would say that was pretty good.
I don't know if it's good or bad, but if that's what fluency is, if it's talking like this may certainly be a step in the right direction for many people. Certainly for me, there are times where I wish I could have talked like that.
Yeah.
But for that...
I was gonna say, including me.
Right. But for that to be fluency, for somebody to say that to me, well, that's me being fluent... You know, I'm not judging it as good or bad, but is that really what we're looking for?
And just to be fair, we can say that what you were describing, the problem that you were describing there. So just for a little picture right now, Peter is dipping unsalted pretzels into mustard.
It's delicious.
I need salt.
And it looks very good. The problem that you were describing with fluency shaping, Peter, could happen with other speaking strategies as well, not just fluency shaping. And again, it just goes back to, you know, just being more descriptive as opposed to like lumping all this stuff in one box. Okay,
wait a second. Wait a second, guys. I hate to play the experience card here, but I have seen many more casualties of fluency shaping, and I cannot think of any casualties of stuttering modification that had been, well, as poignant as what I just described.
Let me ask you a question.
I can totally, and in my own personal experience.
Who?
Like,
or letting, not by name, but like by what?
No. I'm saying me. Like letting myself stutter to a point where I was going to let myself stutter regardless. If I have something to say, it doesn't matter to me how it came out or how it comes out. And now, in my journey, that's a problem for me, and that's an issue, and that's something that I'm working on because I am working more on the overt characteristics of
That's not what I meant. What I meant was, when you think of a tool, like, I even hate to use the word, but when you think of a traditional classic speaking strategy, you have the fluency shaping on one side, on the stuttering modification side, you have the cancellations, the pullouts. I know people who have used cancellations for years on end, but when they come to me after going through those therapies and using cancellation pullouts for years on end, where they are with their stuttering is not, the stuttering modification tools don't seem nearly as ingrained into the stuttering pattern as the fluency shaping tools are. I think what you're talking about, Eric, is something different.
I don't necessarily know if I agree with you, but wait.
Similar problems that I've had, I would say, in the past year. And yeah, since I copy everything you do, I'm trying to do some, you know, modification and stuttering reduction rather than just stutter my face off all the time to the point where it hurts my body.
Yeah, right. I think I want to take a break here and then come back.
No, wait. I want to make one more point before the break, because around a year ago from now, Eric, you were talking about were stuttering very openly, and I asked you, well, do you ever use the stuttering modification tools? And your response was, you don't need to because you do it anyway. And I said, no, Eric, it's very different if you do the tools on purpose rather than waiting to accidentally just move through stutter.
It was, no, see, that's where you're wrong. And if you want to get into this whole thing again, it's going to be a whole, you know, I would use them, not accidentally. My body knew what a pullout was, and I would use pullouts to pull out a speech, and I still do. It was never accidentally. I got stuck. I was having trouble, and I would, quote, use what I thought a pullout was.
Okay, the point I'm trying to make is what you're saying now about how when you got... The point I'm trying to make is this. There was a point where I said to you, Eric, I think you're very good at stuttering openly, but you don't seem to know what to do to move through the stutter. And you were very much of the mind, well, right now I just need to stutter. So I don't think there's anything wrong with just needing to let the stuttering out. I've got no problem with that. I wouldn't call that a casualty of anything. It just seems that at some point people who stutter may want to then have an idea of how to look at their stuttering and find ways to move through it better or more
I was
easily.
Stuck there, though, for a very, very long time, and that's when I thought it turned into a problem. I was stuck in that place.
I couldn't find a way to move from accepting
stuttering to really trying to work on overt characteristics of speech.
Okay, let me say one more thing, and then if you want to comment, but I think this is important because I don't think that was a casualty of letting it out. I remember it as you seemed pretty negative towards any type of, quote, tool. And you seem to be very much into, I'm just going to stutter, and I don't need to modify, I don't need to fluency shape, I just need to stutter. And I just think that's I don't think it's a casualty at all. I just think it's where you were.
I don't think you're portraying the situation accurately here. I think that I, at the time, regardless of what I was saying, you know, I wanted more fluent speech, and I thought by being open, and I thought by doing the things that I was doing, I was still going to somehow get more fluent speech.
I'm glad that you say that, though, because I feel like that's just an underlying thing that some of us don't like to talk about sometimes, is that really, if we're in a long block or stuttering uncontrollably, it's not a lot of fun, you know? Even if we're saying that we're in a place where we just need to stutter our faces off, well, maybe we are, but there's still that voice in the back of your head that's like, man, I wish that block wasn't so long.
I honestly, Eric, I
wait.
I just don't know if you.
So why are you coming back to me now? We're having a.
I know that, but I know you a lot more than Joel. And I just remember, like, when we first met, you were saying to me that you just needed to stutter. You needed to voluntarily stutter. Yeah. And wait. And I remember saying to you, I said, "You, there will be a time when that's not going to be enough."
I can't tell if this is an "I told you so" or what you're trying.
What I'm trying to say to you. You might be selling, like, right now you're referring to the letting it out as becoming a casualty, but I don't know if you remember how much when I first met you. Just let me finish the statement.
I can't, dude. You're like twisting words. Like, I was saying it could be a casualty. A person could feel like sometimes it's a casualty.
I thought you said for you, it was fair. I thought you said for you, stuttering modification and letting it out was a casualty.
I certainly think, to some degree, it may have been.
And I just want to remind you that when we met, it was like your air. When I told you that I did voluntary stuttering for over 3 years every day, and then one day I didn't need to do it anymore, I remember you were like, how can you not need voluntary stuttering anymore? And I remember saying to you, well, I'll use it on occasion, but I don't need to use it every day, every time I speak. I've sort of done it where, all right, now I can stutter openly and I'm okay with it and I know I can. And you were like, no way. Like, you were really at that point where you needed to stutter. And I don't know if you remember how much you needed.
You're missing the point, though. I certainly was on some, like, absolutely, okay. I needed to. You know?
The point had to be said, because if I missed it, then other people did too.
No. I'm just saying, you know, that yes, while all of the openness and the voluntary stuttering and advertising and just striving to be comfortable was an amazing game changer in my life, along with it came some things that now are making it a little hard for me or a little more challenging to achieve what it is I'm trying to achieve at this point.
Can you give one example of that? Like, one thing that you might have done that's making life hard now?
How I was so vigilant in saying what I wanted to say, regardless if I was going to have trouble or not. Vigilant in speaking my mind. For going out to the world and not letting stuttering at all get in the way of what I wanted to do. Going into situations wanting to stutter. Like, that became my mindset, you know? I don't care if I stutter. I'm going to say what I wanted to say because for so long I didn't, you know?
I guess I'm having a hard time figuring out why that was a bad thing. Either then, if that's really what you need to do at the time.
I'm not saying that it was a bad thing. I'm just saying at this stage of my life now, I think it's making it difficult to, like, realize that sometimes I don't have to speak and sometimes I could sit back and think about or work on the things that I have to work on to produce speech a little easier. Okay, let's take a break and we'll come back.
this is Barry Yeoman, and you're listening to Stutter Talk.
Hi, this is Samantha Januso, and you're listening to Stutter Talk.
Hi, this is Lee Caggiano with Friends, and you are listening to Stutter Talk.
Hi, this is Alan Rabinowitz, and you are listening to Stutter Talk.
Welcome back to Stutter Talk, your place for the best in stuttertainment. What do you guys think? Stuttertainment?
Stuttertainment?
Stuttertainment.
Below average.
Stuttertainment.
Okay.
Tough crowd.
Peter Wright is here with Eric Jackson, the man, the myth, the legend, Joel Corte.
That's right. Joel Corte is in the house for 3 weeks.
Hey, Eric, I got a question for you really quick.
You just railroaded.
All right, I'll keep my topic for next episode.
I think it's good.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. No, just don't take forever to answer it, though, because I just did railroad. You railroad people sometimes.
It's fine. I'll get over it.
Okay.
I get plenty of airtime. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
That's true.
I was talking to your sister about... Or you were there, and I was just like, yeah, you know, it was so great to meet Eric. It was the first time I ever saw someone stuttering openly and communicating effectively.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know. You just, like, gave me, like, kind of a weird look. And I was wondering what if there was anything behind that.
What?
It just seemed kind of weird. Like, I mean, it was a natural conversation. I was just telling her how much you meant to me when you were an intern. I said, I'm trying to do
exactly
the same thing.
Exactly, which is uncomfortable for a man to hear that someone compliment him like that.
All right. You're a special guy, Joel. We'll just leave it at that.
It was
you're
great.
A special guy.
I was telling your sister.
It means a lot to me.
This is your profession, and you know.
Sorry for touching your hand there.
No, and I was saying, hopefully I can make some kind of an impact now that I'm an intern at AIS. And I was trying to tell your sister that, and you got all weird on me.
I didn't mean to get weird. I was just, I got uncomfortable that you were saying all these nice things about me.
That's all. That's, you go, Peter. Your turn.
Hey, wouldn't you get uncomfortable if a man is saying nice things, paying you compliments in front of somebody else?
I'm in touch with my feelings, Eric. All right. So,
this is how I roll.
I got to give Joel a hug right now.
This is how I roll.
Joel, here, I'm going to give you a big hug right now.
Yeah, air hugs work really great for radio, guys. All right.
It wasn't an air hug. It was an actual flesh-to-flesh.
I meant on-air hug. On-air hug.
Oh, yeah.
So I was on a speech pathologist website today. No reason to name names. But I was... yeah. Well, that's how we roll. We don't need to pick on people at Stutter Talk.
Yeah.
But we can discuss ideas. So I'm going to take one quote, and to be fair, you could even say, Mr. Wright says, couldn't that be taken out of context? Well, everything can be out of context. But here's the quote. You will be able to use your new way of producing speech whenever you choose to use it. I added the emphasis to the word choose. And it just seems like, I guess I'm so tired of seeing the speech pathologist say, this is what I do, this is what I think. You will be able to use your new way of producing speech whenever you choose to use it. So the implication seems like, well, there's something out there. And if you choose to use it, Mr. Corte, Mr. Jackson, well, how does that make you guys feel? I mean, I read it and I think my ears got hot. You know, like I it upsets me still to see that.
Yeah. But there is a little bit of truth, I would say, in it. For example, voluntary stuttering, like you say, as a way of moving forward in speech. What if that's what they're referring to? I'm sure they're not, but I'm just saying.
Honestly,
you can choose when you want to stutter.
Guys, somebody recently said to me, everything isn't okay. You're being way too kind to
I'm trying to disagree with you because I agree with you too much.
If I were to say to you, if I were to say to you, you know, Joel, voluntary stuttering, it will change your life. It will make you fluent if you choose to use it. Now, I would never say that to you.
Obviously.
I would never say that to you. But it just seems like what we know about stuttering. Would you guys agree that there are times, and you're not surrendering, you're not waving the white flag, but aren't there times where you want to control your stuttering and you just can't do it?
Yeah.
You're the guest.
Oh, I am. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. I don't know what else to say about that.
And I just feel, and then you just said it perfectly. And I just think there are some professionals, maybe many, who don't seem to understand that basic fact about stuttering. There are times where no matter how smart or hardworking you are about stuttering, you just can't speak the way you want to speak.
It does, and it creates this false freedom almost.
Explain that.
Oh, look at this. You know, you can have the power to have a choice. And just as you said, sometimes you can't. And when you can make a choice to do anything, that's when stuttering specifically is really, really hard, you know? So to make it glossy and to say, you know, if you have therapy with me, I'm going to teach you how to make choices. I'm going to give you the sense of freedom to use these things to produce fluent speech. It really gets under my skin also.
Well, who coined that phrase, which I agree with, that you can't always choose when you're going to stutter, but you can choose how you're going to stutter? I mean, that kind of makes sense.
I think a lot of people have said things like
that. Okay.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that kind of has some similarities to that statement.
I think it does, but, I will bet that, I don't know what website this is, but...
And that's true. I didn't tell you guys. I just have a quote here.
I will bet that it's a picture of an attractive speech therapist, life looks easy, flowing hair, a dog in the corner of the website, or something like that, you know, where it's just made into this thing that's too easy. It simplifies.
That's one possibility. Another possibility is, you know, the person who presents it all is based in science or scientific-y language. Is that a word, Joel? Scientific-y language?
I doubt it.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I'd refute that one.
Scientifically?
Yeah.
I'm going to pop a blood vessel tonight.
You didn't get my joke, refute?
That's great. I didn't get it. That's really clever.
But at least you pointed it out.
I had to. I was like, come on, that's a little funny.
It was funny.
You should have stressed that extra syllable a little bit.
All right.
Just a little bit more.
Next time, Peter.
Yeah.
Peter's telling you how to talk right now. So
Joel, on the break, we were talking briefly about a topic that sort of piggybacks on what Eric and I were talking about last week about should self-help and speech therapy be mutually exclusive. And you've been thinking a little bit about individual therapy and group therapy. Tell us what you're thinking.
Well, you know, this week I've seen some different stutterers, some different types of stutterers, and different types of issues that we all have in all different places. And you'll see somebody and you'll think, man, I just really wish we could do this for a little while longer, like voluntary stuttering or some more desensitization work. On the other hand, maybe there's someone else that you'd like to work on prolongations for a little bit longer instead of something else. But you can't because you're in a group. You're kind of limited in that sense. Now, on the other hand, there's so many advantages to group therapy. I know some of the stuff that I did when I was doing group therapy at AIS, I don't think I could have done it by myself. So I'm just kind of wondering if the pros outweigh the cons when it comes to group therapy. I think they do, but you know, there's some times when you just really wish that you could work on a specific thing for a longer amount of time. What do you guys think?
I think it depends. Next topic. No, I mean, seriously, it depends. Yeah. I mean, obviously, I mean, the reason that, Eric, I think you brought up the topic last week, or one of them, is that, I mean, simply being in a room or in a location with other people who stutter is so powerful. Yeah. I don't care what you call it.
Yeah.
Of course, there are other times where you want to focus on you. So, I mean, ideally, you would get a little bit of both. Okay. You'd get time with people who stutter and time to work with somebody on what you specifically need.
Yeah, I think a big part of it, too, is that at certain times, or depending where the person is on their journey, has a big role in determining what might be more helpful.
Mm-hmm. I will tell you this, with children, group therapy can be really wonderful because it can get a child who's so deeply ashamed of stuttering and so deeply shy about it to open up. There are times where I've had students who don't want to talk about stuttering, who don't want to work on any aspect of stuttering. And as soon as there's another child in the room who stutters, you can see the other child is the one who makes it okay, not me. And I think I'm good at what I do, but there are times where it's so valuable to have a group of people who stutter. And there are times where I will say to a parent, you know, I think next week, come at a different time, we'll do a solo session. I think we need to work on some things, just the two of us. Or I love to stagger it, where if I have a group session, one child will come in at 4, the next child will come in at 4:30, they'll get a half an hour together, and then the second child will get a half an hour by himself, so that each child gets a half hour by themselves and a half hour together. So I like to be very flexible, but man, having another person who stutters helps you just to get deeper with, or it helps a child open up if they, you know, need to do so.
Now, but on that same note, a thing that I'm finding myself just obsessing about is what clients are thinking about. Like, when they go home, what place are they in? Did they do enough desensitization work? If they order something at the grocery store and they get a really bad response from the teller, is it going to be just a really bad experience for them? And then I start to think, well, when is enough desensitization work enough? And is there really any way to tell that? Because I constantly feel like whenever those fears start creeping in, it just comes out of nowhere, and I'm like, oh, geez, I need to desensitize again. And I'm just wondering if, in your guys' experience, if you ever feel like you know when enough is enough of something.
I have to say that I feel that way less and less, because really the point of therapy, and some could argue this, but I doubt many would, the point is to get the person who stutters to be in charge of what they need. So,
okay.
You know, I'm learning more and more to trust that my clients know what they need. And I also understand that part of therapy is having tough days and having pain and experimenting. And so, you know, it sucks when somebody is feeling pain. And like, I remember doing voluntary stuttering with somebody, and the person they were speaking to walked away from them. So here they are, like, finally get the courage to use some voluntary stuttering. The person walks away and they burst into tears. But the next day, they felt so good that they had done it.
Okay.
So, I mean, I try not to think of people who stutter as being too fragile.
Okay.
And, you know, it's tough for us to have to feel other people's pain, but, you know, often growth comes with pain.
I'd just add that speaking personally here, I think that was one of the real, or that is one of the really hard things. You know, as I was saying, the foreigner little argument, I thought that if I did enough of that stuff, you know, voluntary stuttering, telling people I stuttered, stuttering openly, if I kept doing it, eventually I would just not care about stuttering anymore, you know. And I think like a big sign of change for me was when I started to realize that it's not so black and white, and there's like this whole gray area, mm-hmm. you know. So I still think it's an issue, and I still have a hard time at times, but it's just way less intense. And it doesn't last as long afterwards. Like if I have like a really bad interaction and I get upset, it just goes away. It dissipates a little faster.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys also think, this is my last question that I've been thinking about this week, that when you have a group therapy and it's intense and there's all these feelings and a lot of good feelings and you're on top of the world, that, and I, post group therapy, post AIS, two or three times I've gotten myself into pretty dark places again.
Yeah.
But, you know, they didn't last as long, and I worked my way out. But are those dark places inevitable at some point? Or
I think so. I thought they wouldn't be.
Yeah, but me too. I really didn't think they would be.
I think being in a similar program, our first experience was at AIS, you know. I felt as though a very, very rosy picture was painted for me while I was there. And I thought that if I did enough stuff, I wouldn't have those dark thoughts. And certainly right after the intensive, I was on cloud nine mm-hmm. for a while, but eventually,
which is kind of cool in its own right.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like an amazing experience, changed my life, you know. But yeah, like being okay with the, or understanding that they're gonna come at times, being okay with that, and just being in a place where they don't last as long.
Maybe I should throw out there, guys, that we're all involved with self-help, with the National Stuttering Association. You guys are involved with AIS. I worked as a student clinician at the Successful Stuttering Management Program. So we've been around people who have felt the need to perhaps fly across the country for a stuttering event. There's a whole host of people who stutter who we don't know. And it's very possible that there are many people who stutter who do not have to hit rock bottom. I think we've all, we could maybe all agree that we have all hit rock bottom maybe several times. Mm-hmm. I'm not so sure that everybody has to, but I know that I certainly had to, and which propelled me to make changes. But there's so many people who stutter who we just don't know where they are. I mean, we got an email from Daniel a couple days ago, and he said, I agree with you guys. Where are all the stutterers? You know, so perhaps the stutterers we know are just a small sample size.
Yeah, and I of course, and I agree. I just think, though, when we're talking about AIS and we're talking about, like, a group therapy intensive program like that, like, you do get, well, I don't even know if I get, I was about to say you get that small population of stutterers who need help. And to me, I feel like we have to make a distinction between those people that need help, have made a decision that stuttering is a big problem in their life that they have to deal with versus those people who may stutter a lot less or who stuttering might not be a big problem for, which is that other group you're talking about.
I got another question. I'm really interested. Okay. So, remember when I recorded my first podcast with you guys? You guys took those YouTube videos and all that stuff. And this week, I've been reading my journal entries and trying to get myself back in those places each day so I can kind of relate to the clients. So, when I was doing those podcasts and was just kind of like on fire with open, clean stuttering and just getting all excited about never, ever doing any avoidance again, no matter what, and all that stuff. What did you guys think was going to happen to me?
Peter, why don't you take this one?
I just know so many. I mean, forget the American Institute with stuttering. Any intensive program. So many people go through intensive programs and just crash afterwards. And we must have suggested to you that that was a possibility. I mean, it just seems like a topic that comes up all the time. Like, intensives are very special. You go somewhere, you're around people who stutter. There's a certain vibe that goes along where all of a sudden you get off an airplane and you're in a room and somebody's telling you they understand a lot about stuttering and this is what you need to do and everybody else is doing it and you got to stay with the group and there's power in numbers.
Yeah.
And then you get home and you're back and this, you smell your sofa again. You go to work. Your boss is there back in Minnesota. Same boss, same girlfriend, same mom, same noisy neighbor, and you're back in it. And crashing and burning is huge. So I certainly felt there was a real possibility of that.
And a lot of your memories growing up and stuff, the bad memories are all there when you get home, too. And that's, I think I could speak for all of us when I say, like, those sometimes can be a problem for us. At the same time, though, I think that when we were hanging out during your program, I certainly suggested that, it seems really great right now.
I just didn't believe you at all. I thought, I just respected the hell out of you, but I just thought, you know, this is not going to be a problem anymore, you know.
You know, when I was interning at the successful stuttering management program in Utah, an intensive program that the American Institute, I think it's fair to say they base a large part of what they do.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, this whole first week has been the first SSMP week, anyway. Stuff. Yeah,
right. A speech pathologist who I highly respect said to me very bluntly that intensive programs are like cults. And I remember hearing it, and I understood the person felt that way, but I could not relate to it at all because I was meeting and seeing people who were getting off the plane. And getting off the plane, they had the spirit of the program. And then you see people at conferences 6 months later, and unfortunately, you often hear a very different story. And they'll say things like, you know, it was really tough coming home, and I was great for like 2 or 3 weeks, and then it hit me. Hmm. And, you know, I still learned a lot from the program, but, like, it was hard, and I came home so fluent, and then, like, I wasn't fluent anymore, and the stuttering came back, and all the bad feelings came back. And so I think I have I quickly got a much more sober view. And, like, a part of therapy we just don't understand is, like, what happens. We sometimes we think these speech tools are magical and special, but you're around all these great people who stutter, and it's so great to be with your people, and you learn so much from your people, and then you get home and your people aren't there anymore.
Well, to a degree.
Well, to a big degree.
Well, okay.
You know,
but
to a huge degree.
All day.
But okay, I mean, I know, I agree. It's happened to me. But don't you think that just that whole experience as a catalyst is just worth it, though?
It could be for some, and for some it's not.
I would say absolutely for me.
Oh, no.
Eric, I would venture to say that for you, too.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. Life-changing.
I think... Absolutely.
Earth-shattering.
Groundbreaking.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of more.
Or wall-busting.
Yeah.
Yeah, wall-busting.
Water shedding.
Stuttertainment.
No. I just want to take this one more place before we close. So what are you going to, how are you going to approach this week? I mean... Do you try to find ways to bring this up with your clients? You know, like, yeah, this is an amazing feeling you might have right now, but once you leave here, it gets really hard. Or is it one of those things where it's such an amazing high, good feeling? Like, why even tamper with it?
Yeah, I think it's got to be somewhere in the middle.
Right.
But, and you didn't tamper with mine, really. I don't think. You weren't like, hey, you know, you might have some problems later. You know, you just, I think.
I did, though.
I don't remember it. I must have just shut you out.
Yeah.
Okay, hey, guys.
But you just admitted it, though, before. Or when I would say things like, oh, yeah, this stuff is
okay.
All...
I'm not going to say what I said. But there is stuff where you can see people's attitudes changing. And, like, a lot of that desensitization stuff, like that construction worker guy, I mean, that whole experience that happened to me, that was never going away. I mean, I was going to... I'll hold on to that moment forever and, you know, use it as a way to keep moving forward. So there's some things that happen that are just permanent, and the attitudes that are starting to be developed, you see it changing. I think some of that stuff is really powerful and really long lasting and permanent.
The construction worker story, I just want to point out for our listeners, was you went up to a group of construction workers, Joel, and asked them to answer some questions about stuttering and got some pretty intense reactions. And we have a video of it, Peter.
Yes, we do.
Which we can find on the site.
From so years why we link to it you mean song. Me. Yes, I will link to it, Eric. I want to point out that when I was, as I chew my pretzel, when I was at the SSMP, Dor Breitenfeld said the entire time to the clients, there's going to be a crash. When you go home, you need to find a therapist. You need to find a self-help group.
Really?
Wow.
As memory serves, people didn't really believe it.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
But it was said repeatedly. But it wasn't like, you know, anyone was going home and like saying, oh, I better just find that support group. Everybody was so flying. Not everybody. It seemed that everybody was flying so high. And the, quote, fluency. Mm. Everybody was stuttering so much less. Some of it was earned. Some of it was sort of stuttering powered influence. You know, you're around your people and you're feeling good. But, man, there were some tough days after those intensives.
Mm-hmm.
Tough.
But there's also a lot brighter days, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Way to turn it around there.
Hey, I'm Cordy. Just saying, man, I know how it was before,
yeah, I
know how it was after.
I think that the the tough part is, I think a lot of people who go to attend intensive, this is just my experience, may not fully understand that the therapy doesn't end when they leave.
Yeah. And that's and that basically what it comes down to. Yeah.
I think you trust I should your say feelings. That the like, I mean, you're feeling this amazing euphoria in a lot of cases, you know? And like a drug, it's like so like, God, like I feel incredible. Mm-hmm. I feel empowered right now. Like this is not going to end. And... Mm-hmm.
But it's good you can't to feel last. That, though, too, like yeah, no, you no. said. Like,
yeah, of course.
Yeah, because it's potentially the first time you've ever felt had that relationship with your stuttering.
Yeah.
And that's pretty amazing.
Not to you, Joel. I'm just saying.
I have more thoughts, but I don't think they're really going to go anywhere right now, so... I mean, I'm just going to say it again. The more we do Stutter Talk, we're 3 years in. We're always talking about programs and speech tools, and I'm starting to think that if our field just stopped it with all the speech tool nonsense, and we just talked about what do we do and what can we do differently, and we just got rid of the modification and the fluency like shaping. The
putting
plus.
Names on everything?
Oh, well, but it's exactly more than names because it's layers. You know, fluency shaping, stuttering modification, these often become...
You know what, though? I do have an anecdote for that. I want you to finish, though.
No, please.
I had this really great therapist before I went to AIS, and that was kind of the way she approached it, but it just... didn't really stick for me. And I think that a lot of times when you have a name for something, you're able to remember it better. And if you practice a prolongation, mm-hmm. it tunes into your brain a little better, maybe that muscle memory or whatever.
But that's the point. You're practicing a prolongation.
Yeah.
Whereas one of the things that we keep talking about on Stutter Talk is... Well, we just keep apply speech tool here. We keep applying things here, mm-hmm. as opposed to well, you just had a stutter. You just tensed. Your speech stopped moving forward there. How can you approach that differently? What did you do? Well, it would be a different way to do it. But the way that you're talking now, or what you just said now, was like, well, we practice, and I don't think there's anything wrong with. Practicing moving through sounds and moving through words and tensing and untensing. Yeah. I don't have any problem with that, but so often the substance of what you're doing gets lost in the term. At least that's my experience. And I find that when I challenge myself not to use terms, and even a word like tensing, things can get lost in that.
Regardless of what word is used, it's almost like if you say... any word enough times, yeah. it's just gonna become at some point meaningless.
I agree with you, and Joel. This
and that's what happens.
Yeah. And you walk into Stutter Talk, so like we're in a totally different place right now.
But that's good because then I can give a different perspective.
So what I'm gonna say is like what I'm so tired of, and I don't mean this like I understand why people do it, but I just get asked so often. Oh, I hear you do stuttering. What tool do you use? Mm-hmm. Like, apply medicine here. Apply antidote here. And it seems like somehow we've gotten from the process of change and helping people make significant, meaningful awareness and change into apply patch here. And I'm sort of trying to push back against it. So, you know, I hope you're not a casualty of that, you know?
Well, I do think it just helps you remember things better. Just speaking from my own experience in the past year where I'll be going camping with a bunch of friends and I'll be with my girlfriend and we'll be driving up and you'll be like, you know, I really want to work on managing my speech this weekend. And I'll get up there and I don't have a clue what I'm doing, and I get in a 10-second block, and that hasn't happened to me for 4 months, and I don't even know what to do. But if I think in my head, pull out, it's like, oh, yeah, pull out. that's where I do this, or prolongation. It makes it have some kind of a structure, I think.
I think that's completely okay. Of course, another structure to have is, and again, it's much easier said than done, but to get into the habit of, I'm getting stuck here. What am I doing and what can I do differently? Mm-hmm. And obviously, if you want to give it a name, if that helps, that's fine. But I think that sometimes in our field, when we rely too much on, again, like I sort of picked a rabbit hole here, mm-hmm. because like you give things a name and then sometimes sort of magicness gets applied to it.
Is that what you're really thinking though? Like pull out. You're not thinking what it's going to feel like when you ease out of that sound.
I don't know. I mean, are
big flashing lights going across? Like, oh, pull out.
No, I haven't been doing that stuff for like a year, and it hasn't really been working out. But now that I've thrown myself in this internship and we're doing right. everything but stuttering modification.
Do you hear what you just said? I really haven't done this stuff for a year.
Yeah.
Let me just, maybe I won't, just for an argument's sake, if you haven't done it in a year, doesn't that tell you something?
Yeah.
What does it tell you?
It tells, well, I don't, I guess I don't really know where you're going with this.
That term doesn't work.
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I wasn't thinking about these terms.
I know.
I wasn't.
I know, but I mean, it sounds like what you're saying is you haven't been thinking about these things that you've learned in a very long time.
Yeah.
And my point is, if you haven't been thinking about it, but now that you're back in the program, you are, does that tell you something? I know, I'm putting you on the spot, but it's real stuff.
Well, I guess I don't really know. I think you're leading me on. You want me to say something, come to some conclusion, but I don't really know where you're going.
Well, it sounds like what you're describing is, and please correct me if I'm wrong.
I happily will.
It sounds like what you're describing is that you've gotten a lot from this, but at the end of the day, the program works when you're in it.
I don't know. Let's see. Have me on again.
Okay, now you're sort of leaving me hanging here, Joel, because, I mean, if you go back... Well, Eric, do you want to save this, or do you have nothing to say here?
Please, I have nothing to say. No.
What are you doing right now?
What?
What are you... You guys just had a show on how you're... Well, you already described that in that show.
I just want to say, though, that, so you're... And introduced to this thing called a pullout at the program, and then you leave and you stop using them, you know? And what we're kind of saying is that, well, yeah, that term loses its meaning. So you are going to leave, and at some point, maybe...
You know what, Joel?
It just doesn't work for me.
Here's what I'm going to say.
It didn't help me.
And only because we love you so much, I'm going to be much more blunt with you than I am with somebody else. But were you taught to think about stuttering, or were you taught to use a pullout? Is that fair? Like, can I ask you that?
Yeah, I was taught to think about stuttering. Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then, I mean... Let me put you on the spot here. So when you say you haven't really used these, quote, tools or things for a long time, like, why is that?
I don't know. That's something I've been trying to figure out. And at the NSA conference when they had that show, the B team had that show on voluntary stuttering, I was just thinking, why don't I do this more? I know how helpful it is, and I think it's just... I have no idea. I think it might be that I haven't been, like, I listen to Stutter Talk, but I haven't been that much into managing my speech.
That's what my dad was saying.
Managing my speech that much because I live pretty comfortably with my stuttering. I've accepted it, but now I'm in a place in the last couple months, specifically probably the last 6 weeks, where I'm, especially after listening to that Fred Murray episode, where I'm like, I want to make some changes again. I want to stutter less.
We will take the credit, but the truth is, it wasn't, I'm going to guess, it wasn't the Fred Murray episode. It's the fact that you were at the NSA and you were part of not only Stutter Talk, but all that goodness and being around your people and being around.
Is that true? Well, no, I mean, but not because that.
How could you differentiate that, though?
Well, it made me come to some conclusions because I was around so much stuttering-related things. Like, started to get me thinking about where. Actually, it's been going on longer than this because I helped run a stuttering camp for 4th, 5th, and 6th graders, and
so
I remember
people who stutter.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay, yeah, I just think and. I know it's going to sound like we're just beating a dead horse, you know, but one of my problems
is that
we say, I want to get back into this and I want to start practicing these things again. And I'm not saying that you're saying this. I'm just saying in general, you know, so we have these terms. We have these labels. We have pullouts. We have voluntary stuttering. The fact of the matter is that when you go out into the real world, sometimes it's harder to quote use these things than when you're in a clinical setting, when you're in an intensive program. But I think what happens is that because it does get a little harder outside, like the true nature of these labels shows. And it's like a voluntary stutter is not always the same thing every time you're doing it. Like a pullout, it's not always the same thing every single time you're doing it. So like there's this whole like, wait a second, but I tried to use a quote pullout here and it didn't work, and it worked this time and it didn't, and it just like that's why for such a long time I was just completely against speech tools and still am, like in this labeling thing, but it just doesn't make sense in my head that like, oh well, if we give them a name, it would make it easier. No, it doesn't. It makes it more convoluted.
I don't know, man. I think it'll help me remember better. Here's my thing. For whatever reason, it's tough to remember this stuff.
You're not the only one, by the way.
Okay, so when you start having issues and you don't take the time to properly reflect on what's going on, and maybe it's all coming together. Maybe it's this awareness that you guys are talking about. And to me, I think that having specific names for things might help. Like, especially labeling different kinds of voluntary stuttering. Like, what kind of voluntary stuttering do I need to use right now? Do I need to use the desensitization variety or the forward moving variety?
Well, I mean, voluntary stuttering is kind of a special beast. I do put it a little bit apart from the other things
that we do.
It's
like so different though each time. Like it's never the same thing.
What I'm wondering, guys, is, and maybe I'm off base here, but I will wonder this aloud. Are speech pathologists teaching people to think about stuttering and to make changes? Or are they teaching people to use patches? And I'm not sure. I mean, I understand what you're saying. To give things names are fine. But so like if you're working on your speech, Joel, and you come up with a term for something you're doing, well, that's one thing. But for you to be given a name and told this is what you need to do, you need to use a pullout, you need to use a cancellation, you need to fluency shape there. Again, I understand
it. Fluency shape.
Yeah.
That's good.
If you need to lid comb the stuttering away, I understand that these things help many people. They've helped me.
Yeah.
But are we teaching people to think? Or are we teaching people to apply a patch in hopes that it works? And maybe the truth is somewhere in the middle,
probably. I think it brings people comfort too.
Well,
that's learning.
Yeah, it's like, a huge thing. I have a tool. Well, yeah. There's something powerful in that. You know, it comes highly recommended, this tool.
I got them on my little card. I could just put this card in my back pocket and pull it out, and I have a nice laminated list of the tools I can use.
And then perhaps...
That was one thing that killed me.
Yeah.
The tool sheet?
Oh, bring this thing in your back pocket and just look at this list of tools, and you'll remember what to use. And it's like, I can't remember what to...
Yeah, and Joel, you know, I work with clients who say things like, you know, when I go into meetings...
Still got that in my wallet.
So, I'm being a...
No, but when I go into meetings, I really, really, really need to do something to reduce my fear of stuttering, because I do get sort of tense about my stuttering. And, you know, I just don't remember to do it. So, like, even then, I mean, it's tough to think about doing something when you need to do it. I mean, these are really challenging things. Like, I remember going in to classes in college or graduate school or going out to eat and making myself a goal, writing down on a pad of paper, when I order my food tonight, this is what I'm going to do. You know, so I think there are ways we can make ourselves focus on what we want to focus on.
Mm-hmm. Do you? I'm going to ask you a question. Yeah. I don't know if it's going to make sense to you. Yeah. Do you think there's a danger in the fact that you're so immersed in stuttering, you work on stuttering all the time, you work on your own stuttering all the time, right, with the level that you think, the complicated level that you think about stuttering, the way that you think about your own stuttering, could possibly do a disservice and not help a client who isn't thinking about their stuttering at that level at all? It's just too much?
I mean... My goodness. So you're saying, if not just forget Peter, if somebody's smart or thoughtful about stuttering, could that hurt somebody because they might not be as smart or thoughtful? This is for Mr. Peter. I want to take this.
Well, you know,
Mr. Peter's going to take this.
You got to take time to play around with your speech to feel how different things feel and all that stuff like that.
Good point.
Because that's, now that I'm thinking about this, I think that's what happened to me with my old speech therapist. Is I was just like getting a block, and I'd be so obsessed with, well, what do I do? And I wasn't desensitized to like play around and make different weird stutters. And
but since when? I mean, when have people who stutter, do we get this idea that change is supposed to happen overnight or quickly? I am so grateful that I was never led or misled to believe that change could be extremely quick. I mean, it's hard. It took a lot of practice, not necessarily drill work, but allowing myself to stutter, allowing myself to play with stuttering, allowing myself to think about stuttering, allowing myself to talk to people about stuttering, allowing myself to accept that it was going to be really painful sometimes and that would be okay. And that, you know, it's like getting hit by a baseball. Well, gee, you can get hit by a baseball and get knocked out for a second and then get in the batter's box in 10 minutes and do it again. You know? Does that answer your question at all?
No, it didn't.
I'm way off base there.
I just want
to... Okay.
No.
It was a baseball analogy, though, so...
It was eloquent.
Eloquent.
Well said, but you didn't answer the question at all. I think...
At all?
Okay. Maybe on some level you did. I think, yes, we... I'm going to specifically talk about Peter and I right now, okay? And if I say something you disagree with, just jump in or raise your hand or something.
Not a problem.
Yes, we talk about stuttering constantly. We think about stuttering constantly. We're always trying to think of ways to better explain things. I would hope that it isn't coming across as either being like snobbish or being way too intellectual. I think that by talking things out, though, and just being as honest as we can, then we will never be doing anybody a disservice.
Okay. I remember that episode when you guys were doing Van Riper stuff, and there was a recording.
Peter's sitting on my bed right now.
there was a recording of him, and he just came. I mean, I really respected him and everything, but he came off. I'm like, man, the old man's out of touch in his stuttering reduction, and I think he's forgot what it's really like.
I think I have said things like that to you.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and the reason that we picked that clip was because there's something in it. It's so interesting where there's such a high level of confidence, I dare say arrogance.
Yeah.
And I think we see that. Well, I know we see that with some of the therapists today. But today, instead of taking the bullying line, which Van Riper was a sort of a bully, they take the scientific, pseudoscientific line. Well, everything I do is based in evidence. And then there's that angle to convince. Or, you know, well, I've worked with thousands of people or hundreds of people, and they did it, and you can do it. And so we take these other lines that one could say are overly confident or arrogant or out of touch.
I think there's also something really powerful in making sure that you tell whoever you're talking to or working with or whatever that, like, you don't have the answers. You know, you have opinions, and you've been thinking about stuttering a lot. You know, it doesn't make them right. Everybody's experience, and that's what this is about, how people experience this thing, stuttering. So it's different for everybody, and only you, the person, knows best what it is. You know, like, you could offer insights and ideas and stuff, and I mean, I don't see anything wrong with politely arguing with clients, you know, as long as at the end of the day your goal is to be productive.
You know, I honestly find that the more I sort of fall in line, and I say that with pride, with the Dean Williams, Bob Quisel, let's look at what you're doing, let's see if we can't make some changes that are more productive for you. The more I fall in line with that stuff, the much more smoothly everything goes. I mean, if you're working with a client to help the client, and the client comes to you and says, this is what I'm doing, and your response is, well, let's look at what you're doing, let's see if you are accurate in your description and your understanding of what you're doing, let's get as close as we possibly can to what I see and what you see, and put it together to see what's really going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's make some changes and see next week how those changes are working for you. And let's see if over some extended period of time those changes are good or bad, or what we need to move to the top of your to-do list and what can move to the bottom. I find that when I do those type of things, there's not much to argue about. It just seems like we're doing the work.
Yeah, it's kind of common sense.
I mean, I don't think that's complicated. I hope it doesn't sound arrogant. I'm not trying to oversimplify it. Like recently a client said to me, you know, we're doing everything, we're really hitting it and we're figuring it out, but is there anything that we're not doing? And then I put it back on the client. Well, is there anything that you think we're not doing? Let's look at what you're doing and what changes you're making. And then, so it's not about like what I think the client should be doing, what tool I want to apply here. It's like, what are you doing and what do you want to do differently? And I mean, if there is a recipe for stuttering, that would be the one I would pick. Not that there's a recipe for this stuff, but okay, did I just do the screeching halt? Did the whole show just come to a screeching halt? Will you put a screeching halt sound in there, Eric, for me?
Definitely not now after you asked me to put a screeching halt sound in there.
I agree with exactly what you said, but coming back, yeah. I will also say that the terms are helping me.
That's fine.
I think that they might help me.
That's fine. Yeah.
But we'll see. Because you guys are always right.
wait a second.
Peter's always right.
When you pick up a Van Riper book and you read his descriptions of pullouts and cancellations. It's very valuable. It's very valuable. I'm not saying that it's not, but I think we can also take it too far as a field and as people involved in helping people change their lives. And unfortunately, again, when I get asked time and time again, what speech tool do you use? That's the question. And it's boiled down to this one question: what's your magic? Like that's what the question should be. Not what speech tool do you use. This question should be: what's your magic, kid?
And I'm thinking right now as you say that, and I probably shouldn't even say this right now. We're at such a long show, but.
So should we take a break and then you can say it?
No.
Okay.
I'll say it, and then we could decide if we want to keep it or not. Like, reading that stuff about Van Riper, he came up with all of that stuff on his own, yes. You know, his own personal experience. And that's what he – and that's how he thought about them. And to go back to your point before, Peter, like – what are we teaching our clients? Are we teaching them to think of what actually helps them move through speech? Or are we trying to give them something that they can use? And it's a very different thing. And I'm starting to think, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I don't think his writings on the specific strategies are as useful as a lot of people say they are.
Well, let me put it to you this way. Maybe I'll sort of take the Joel stance on this a bit. I can remember really wanting to learn about stuttering and curling up with a Van Riper book and not being able to put it down. And just because it's so darn insightful about stuttering.
No. Absolutely insightful. I'm not saying it's not insightful.
Can't you just see that image of Peter curling up?
Oh, I was very cold winters.
That was very fetching.
Actually, what we should do for the picture for this show is take a picture of you lying up in my bed with the treatment of stuttering book.
Oh.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. No. Obviously, what he writes about experiences, like how he thinks about stuttering, is amazingly helpful. I was more talking about when he tries, and I will say tries to explain exactly what a pullout is, exactly what a cancellation is, and what it's supposed to do. Like that's what it did for him, and that. But like. It's the same thing we're talking about. It's like giving somebody something and be like, hey, it works for me. Maybe it's going to work for you. Chew on that, field. I just dissed the grandfather of our field. I love you, Van Riper, but...
Well, I think perhaps people who are interested, they can go onto eBay or to Amazon and find a used copy of The Treatment of Stuttering by Van Riper.
I just got it for $2.50.
Yeah. And curl up with it.
$2.50.
And, you know, it's interesting. It's an old book, but I'll tell you, maybe one of the very best articles I've ever read on stuttering is Dean Williams' A Point of View about Stuttering from 1957.
Yeah.
And... Well, obviously, we want to be up to date with stuff.
And we read stuff that comes out now.
Yeah, of course. But
we read it, but...
There's something so pure about picking up a Dean Williams from 57 and just thinking, oh, this is where people are getting it from, you know? Anyway.
So we're going to give Joel the last word and then close out here. Or do you want to or no?
I'd love Joel. Just that I'm happy. I'm having a great time tonight. I'm really happy to be in New York, and I think that personally and professionally, this is a really good spot for me to be in right now.
Very good. I like hearing that.
Yeah, that's a great place to leave it. Been listening to Stutter Talk, Peter, Eric, Joel Corte,
and look out for the B team.
come out here.
If Karen ever agrees to any topics.
I love that Karen rejected one of Joel's topics.
We're so excited.
A couple of Joel's topics.
We are so excited about the Beat Team, and we've gotten so much good feedback, you know, about what you got. Because you're different flavor, the three of y'all.
Okay. Bye, everybody.